Wake up call.
I don't like to point out other show topics because we see a lot of nonsense ones out there. But this one I have to bring up. On First Take yesterday, here is their show topic. Will Arch Manning surpass Peyton, Eli, and Archie to become the greatest Manning yet?
That is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. That kid's still in high school.
He's going into his junior year.
Yeah, he is not even close to be involved in this conversation. If I was Archie, as the patriarch of the family, I would be livid. Again, my boys are fair game. You want to go on your shows and say Eli doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Fair game. He's a paid athlete. College even. Fine. Fair game. My grandson's in high school. You stay away from him with this crap.
Let him have the peace of mind to choose
my
a college.
He hasn't even... I can't wait till he starts recruiting what these people, what these vultures are going to do to him.
It's going to be insane, isn't it?
Oh, my God. By the way, break out the checkbook, South Carolina. Got your back on this one.
Wake up call with Tony V and Ron Culver. Weekday mornings from 7 to 9 Eastern.
Wake up call.
This is how much I cared about Logan Paul fighting Floyd Mayweather. I didn't even bother to look up the rules of this.
The only thing that came out of this was probably one of the great sound bites from Floyd Mayweather I've ever heard.
When it comes to legalized bank robbing, I'm the best.
That's fantastic.
Wake up call with Tony V and Ron Culver. Weekday mornings from 7 to 9 Eastern.
Wake up call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb as we continue along on a Throwback Thursday. Yeah, we're talking about The Sopranos today, but we also got the good of the day.
Here's the good of the day. All right, a world record was broken.
Okay.
And I like to highlight some world records, especially when they just, you know, boggles my mind. Now, before the show, you told me you played golf yesterday.
I did play golf yesterday.
And you had yourself somewhat of a speed round, if you will.
I did. I played in about 3 hours by myself.
18 holes in 3 hours.
18 holes.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
You're off the world record pace by just a bit.
Thanks to the two people ahead of me at six that bogged me down, I probably could have gotten it.
You probably could have. Maybe.
What's the world record?
A Swiss golfer named Jörg Randegger, and I hope I'm saying his name right, but if not, you know, he's probably not listening to me. He's in Switzerland. Jörg Randegger set a Guinness Book of World Record for most holes played in 12 hours.
Oh, how many?
252.
Man, I could never do that.
He ran about 58 miles using just a 7-iron the entire time, just going around the course. He finished with 8 birdies total for that, and he only lost 8 balls.
So he putted with the 6-7-iron, too? That's
yes.
Pretty good. That's pretty remarkable.
It is.
Good for him.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's roughly about...
Would you want to try that?
I wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, if there's financial backing, sure. You know, I would give it a shot, but...
You'd have to have the whole course to yourself.
Yeah.
Right? You can't be behind anybody. And you'd have to be in super shape, I mean, super fit shape to go around that golf course.
I know. I mean,
the important thing, I think the thing that helps him is one, the 7-iron, but two, no cart. You'd think a cart would make you faster, but you have to park it and you have to park it so far away. If he's just hitting it 160 yards with his 7-iron straight and he just keeps running and then keeps hitting it,
right,
he's going to go faster than if he goes back to a cart, drives the cart, hits the ball, parks the cart away from the green, walks on the green, putts, goes back to the cart. He'd rather just go, just keep moving with his legs.
Yeah, and taking nearly 1,400 strokes to do so is
that's
insane.
That's a lot.
My arms would just be dead. I don't, yeah. You know, but his best round was his final round where he shot 90.
All right, with a 7-iron? That's remarkable. They give you 13 other clubs, and most people can't break 90.
Yeah.
Right?
That's awesome. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
You'd think by the last round, you'd be like, I got the 7-iron pretty good.
Now, what I found interesting, though, was that the world record, or the world record for 24 hours is 420 holes in 24 hours, and that's set by former MLB player Eric Burns.
Eric Burns did that? Wow.
Yeah.
24 hours, stayed up all night, all day.
I know that you know. Now you're talking, you know, a lighted golf course.
Yeah, you need all of that stuff.
You need a glow-in-the-dark ball, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if it's a lighted golf course. You're not lighting the woods where my ball would be.
When I was working in Colorado, we had a promotion idea that we almost put together where we wanted to highlight all the great golf courses in Colorado Springs, right? So our promotions guy, he used to come up with these big ideas. And he came up with this idea that one day, me and my co-host were going to play 18 holes. We were going to play the best hole at 18 different courses around the city. And every course would be ready for us when we arrived, because we were obviously timed. So we would start at one course, we'd play like their sixth hole. Like they said, this is our sixth hole is our signature hole. They would take us out there, we'd play the hole, then we'd get back in the car, go back to the parking lot, we'd be driven to another golf course in the city, we would play their 12th hole. We like literally, he had it all mapped out. It just wasn't going to work. There was like insurance issues and all that other stuff. And I was like, I was really bummed because I really wanted to see if I could do it. You know, with all the timing and driving and getting the location, we were really pushing it in terms of daylight. But I thought it was a great idea. But if I was at one course for 12 hours, I don't think I could make it.
No.
I don't think I'd make it.
I go, quit.
Yeah, I'd quit too. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day, you know where the CN Tower, you've heard the CN Tower before, right? It's a gigantic tower in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It kind of looks like the Space Needle.
It kind of looks like the Space Needle. Yeah. You can go up in it, and, you know, on a clear day from the CN Tower, you can see Niagara Falls.
That's pretty cool.
That's how high up you are.
That's awesome.
Well, it is last night. It was lit up in red, blue, and white for the Montreal Canadiens.
Congratulations. Congratulations. They're in the Western Conference semifinals?
Yeah.
Are they off to the finals?
They're off to the finals. They're representing Canada in the Stanley Cup finals. I'm still unsure really how they're doing this, but
let me give the caveat here. There was going to be a Canadian team in the Western Conference finals.
No matter what.
Their division of all Canadian teams was going to produce a winner that was going to take on the winner of the Vegas Colorado series. So if it was the normal Stanley Cup playoffs, we might be eliminating that country from the postseason. But probably. They get to stick around because they all played against each other and emerged with one winner. Congratulations, right. Montreal.
Now, the reason why I put this in the bad, though, is that this tower is located in Toronto. How badly, how desperately did they have plans to just light it up in blue and white?
Yeah, true. They really wanted to do that.
Instead, obviously, they got to, you know, light up their neighbors.
Okay, so a quick question, and I'd love to, if you are of Canadian descent or you are listening in Canada, I don't know. Do Canadians rally around the Canadian team, or is their rivalry with that team so deep they would never want that team to win?
That's a great question.
It's similar to SEC schools, right? I may hate Tennessee, right? And I don't, but let's say I do. But I may root against them because I don't want them to win a national championship. But then I also realize that it might be good for the conference to win the national championship. We're dealing with this with Alabama now. So many schools don't like Alabama. And then when they play, I find them rooting for Alabama. Like, well, I hate Alabama, but I'm rooting for the SEC. Is that the same sentiment in Canada? Do they go, man, I really hate the Canadians? Like, that's a rivalry that's so deep. But they're the only our country's only hope of winning the cup, so I'm rooting for them.
Don't you think there's a level of desperation for Canada going, we don't care, we just want the cup back?
I think so.
I don't care who takes it, who wins it. It needs to be paraded through the streets of Montreal and Ottawa and
Toronto,
I've said this before, all the way to Vancouver.
I've said this before. Imagine if the CFL and the NFL merged and the Edmonton football team kept winning the Super Bowl and the Toronto football team kept winning the Super Bowl and the Vancouver football team kept winning the Super Bowl.
The Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Right, exactly. Whoever. Right? And you go, wow, when is the Vince Lombardi trophy ever going to be back in the good old USFA where we love football and we care about football? And all these countries up in Canada, they don't love it as much as we do, but yet they keep having Super Bowl champions.
Yeah.
Is that how they feel? Do they go, my goodness.
You know what? We might have solved the problem, though. Maybe that's where Aaron Rodgers gets traded.
Yeah, maybe so, right?
Maybe he gets traded to a CFL team for some maple syrup.
What's the Edmonton team? The Edmonton Rough Riders?
Rough Riders?
I don't know.
Or Eskimos?
Eskimos, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah,
I have no idea.
I don't know either. I don't know any. I only knew the Canadian football. I used to watch it like the Grey Cup, like Toronto Argonauts.
Yes.
I remember them. I remember them, but mostly I don't.
Yeah.
Mostly I don't.
The only thing I do like about their football, though, is the 20-yard end zone.
Yeah, that's
or
true.
The, yeah, 20-yard end zone. That, yeah. I think that would be a game changer.
Do they use the metric system, or do they go to yards?
Ooh.
Do they just use yards and like, we don't use your yards in anything else, but we use it here?
Yeah, maybe it's not 20 yards. Maybe is it 20 meters?
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. What's the dumb of the day?
Well, yesterday we were talking about how, you know, the sports media going after Arch Manning might be the dumbest thing we ever had.
Yeah.
And then I came across this story. This might be dumber. I'm comparing the two.
Okay.
Head coach David Cullen, you know him. He's the head coach of the Texans.
Yeah, that's right.
Is not holding mandatory minicamp.
Yes, he's not.
He is quoted as saying, "We've accomplished what we wanted to accomplish."
Which was what?
So I'm going to say this. Put the Texans in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Because obviously, if that team does not need to hold mandatory minicamp, watch out.
Now, didn't the San Francisco 49ers cut theirs because of injury?
Maybe, but that's not what's going on here.
But that's not what's going on here.
No,
the real reason?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, there isn't a reason given. He just says,
reason people in Houston believe is the reason why they did this?
The reason that they believe is basically David Cullen has seen what he needs to see. He's not, this is a first year head coach, so I don't know if he knows exactly what he's doing. He said he made a plan with his players at OTAs and that they accomplished their plan, so that way that's the reason why there's no mandatory minicamp.
Wow.
But we're talking about a team that barely went 4-12.
I know.
And what a lot of people are pointing out is like, if this is your way of saying that you're just tanking and going to be the first team to go 0-17 to get the number one draft pick, kudos. This is.
Is he doing it because he wants to make his veterans happy?
Maybe.
I have never gone to a mandatory. I've never covered a mandatory minicamp where the veterans want to be there.
I mean, that. Yeah.
Is he basically like, my first year coach, I'm going to get all the veterans to like me because I'm like, we're not even going to hold these stupid things.
Maybe that's
nobody
it.
Wants to be there.
It's a different scene here in Houston with this football team now.
Yeah,
I mean, the fans aren't even happy about it. The fans are going, what do you mean? We were 4-12, barely 4-12.
Oh, sure.
And now we have a team where supposedly Tyrod Taylor is going to be the starting quarterback.
Yeah,
you don't have a running game. You don't have really great wide receivers. You lost your top defensive player, and there's a lot of holes that need to be fixed up that haven't been fixed up. You brought some people in, but you haven't really truly worked them out. So what's the deal? Maybe this is just their way of saying, you know what, we're just going to tank this year. I mean, if the Super Bowl champs are holding mandatory minicamp.
Well, I'm gonna back off on that. That seems like a real extreme. Like, these are really basic workouts. Like, you're not implementing your philosophy here. Like, it's not training camp. It's they're just workouts. You're just throwing the ball around, getting a little bit of shape. So I don't.
But you don't think this team needs to gel together?
No. I think the answer is a little bit simpler than they're trying to purposely take. Like, you're not going to purposely tank
by skipping.
Voluntary mini, mandatory mini camp in June is not setting you back so much that you can't win games during the season. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
What I'm saying is it's more likely that he is like, veterans hate this. They all hate this. They all hate this. And he's like, I'm a new coach, and I want to make them happy. We're not coming. July is hotter than Hades. You guys are going to boil. You would boil here. We're not even going to do this. And just decided not to do it. I'm more believing that angle than we're going to purposely lose. Because they can purposely lose games having all the camp.
But you and I have always talked about that, too, that players aren't going to purposely lose.
No, they're not going to lose games. So I'm just saying, it's 3 days. Veterans don't want to be there. You're not doing anything. You don't do anything. You're really just working out. And I think he's just like, I don't need to do that. No.
We'll
gather
right.
In July.
He's probably appealing to his players, especially the veterans, best interest in getting on their good side.
And the players are like, awesome. We don't have to go. I can still do my business stuff.
Yep.
I can still do my off-season thing.
I can search for other teams.
Exactly. I can get my agent on the phone to get the hell out of here. And then in July, we'll get together and we'll start for real.
Yeah. He's doing that because, he says their attendance during OTAs was great.
Yeah. All right. So he's probably making them happy. He's probably making him happy.
Yeah.
But I still think of your 4-12 team, you probably should show up for something.
Probably.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the baseball sticky issue, why it's a little different than the steroid scandal of the 90s. That's coming up next on Wake Up Call.
Pretty eyes of midsummer's morn, they call her dawn.
A throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Going back to 2007, the final episode of The Sopranos aired on this date. This is music from the television show. Glad you could be with us as we continue along with Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com, pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store, and they'll even bring it out to your curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. As we continue along with Wake Up Call, Rosemarie on Twitter, hey, did you watch Breaking Bad? I didn't watch The Sopranos, but I think Breaking Bad is the best series I've ever watched. I agree. I loved Breaking Bad. I thought their ending was good too.
Yeah,
I thought their final episode was good too.
That's an iconic ending, and then they made sure you weren't going to get a sequel.
That's right. They really locked that bad boy in. Breaking Bad, I remember not watching it in the beginning.
Yes.
I didn't watch it.
Well,
it was on AMC.
Well, not only that, but the idea of the show didn't sound appealing to me.
Yeah.
You had a science teacher selling meth.
Yeah. So I didn't watch the first like three seasons, I think. And so anyway, I keep going to this radio station I was working at and everyone's talking about it. And I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, I've done this before with shows where it's just not something I'm going to watch. So then I said, all right, screw it. I'll watch it. Everybody's been talking about it. Everybody's buzzing about it. And I was addicted, and I couldn't stop watching this stupid thing. I could not watch it. There was one time I watched the first, first three seasons were on Netflix, and then season four wasn't out yet, but it had been completed. I remember, desperately trying to find these episodes online. Like, I was literally going to, German websites where I was, clicking every virus and... Yeah, literally to watch the episode. They'd be like, here's a bootleg copy of season one. Do you want to watch it? Click yes. And I'm like, I'm literally like, you know what? I'll buy another laptop. I don't care. Just give me the stupid video. I was addicted. I watched that stupid show till 3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't get enough. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So you're right, Rosemary. Yeah, that ended pretty good too. That was another one we felt like the whole country was gathered to watch to see how Walter White was going to get out of that pickle. He was in New Hampshire. They send him to New Hampshire. I live in New Hampshire. I grew up in New Hampshire. That scene where he was up there in that cold mountain cabin, I was like, oh, I've seen a bunch of those. Is that what's going on in this country? Is that who lives there? Like, all my life, I would see somebody living there going, are they in one of those criminal protection programs? Oh, my goodness. That show was really good. All right. So, Garrett Cole pitched last night for the Yankees. He was at the centerpiece of this spider tack debate that's going on in Major League Baseball. He was asked about it. He said, didn't really give a good answer. We talked about it yesterday. So now Major League Baseball is wanting to crack down on the substances that are on baseballs. And I was saying, look, it's been going on for a very long time, but batters have been okay with it because if you let a pitcher grip the baseball a little bit better, then the ball is not going to fly out of his hand and head towards your head. So there's a trade-off where batters are okay with a pitcher using a little bit of substance to get control of the baseball because the trade-off could be more wilder pitches thrown at their head or at them at any particular moment. But Major League Baseball obviously wants to crack down on this because the spin rates are so crazy that the balls are just about unhittable. And as we pointed out, Major League Baseball cracked down on steroids. They overlooked steroids because they liked the home run, and they want to do something about this because they like the home run. They love offense. Offense is what sells tickets and what brings excitement to baseball. Even though guys like me, I like 2-1 pitcher's duels. I love those. But, you know, the general public has spoken. They like offense. They like home runs. And so they want to crack down on this because offense is way down this year. But it's a little different than the steroid scandal. And here's why. The steroid scandal was very problematic for baseball in this regard. It was an unsafe product that baseball was condoning using all through its ranks. By not cracking down on steroid use at the top, you allowed it to trickle down all the way through to amateur baseball. You allowed it to trickle down all the way to high school baseball. If you set a barrier that says, here's how you're successful in the majors, you have to hit all of these home runs. You have to look like a sculpted god. You have to be able to swing the bat like it's a toothpick. You have to blast them 500 feet. If that's what your sport becomes because you didn't get a handle on what people are putting into their bodies, that becomes the only way people make it. And it's dangerous, very dangerous. Now, in a similar way, if you're a pitcher coming up through the ranks and the only way you can achieve a $300 million contract is by putting a certain spin rate on it, that's at least not going to kill you or has the potential to kill you or cause some serious bodily changes that cause you to have a shortened temper or whatnot. You just have to stop using the product. The steroid situation was dangerous because you could have high school kids doing steroids. You don't want that. You don't want prospects. The kids who are like better than everybody in their area, the ones the scouts are coming to see in high school, the ones where the kids could sign a contract to play in Johnson City, Tennessee, or go to college and play for Texas A&M. Those kids, you didn't want steroids trickling in where a 17-year-old kid is deciding, well, I better take this because the only way I'm going to make it is if I take it. You can do the substance, at least you got to stop taking the substance, and then if everybody stops, we'll figure it out from there. Steroids is not the same. It's a bad product. But I understand where baseball is in a desperation because this is something that pitchers have used forever and ever and ever and ever, but we're now starting to see it bother the sport in a way they don't want it to be bothered, which is the bottom line is offense is down. We need offense up. If guys can't hit the baseball because it's spinning in a weird way, we got to change it. And we got to change it quick. It's a Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Final episode of The Sopranos on this day, 2007, on a Throwback Thursday. This is from Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood. This is the opening episode of season 2. This is when Meadow goes to college and the FBI plants a bug in a lamp in his basement and then she takes it to college. She takes the lamp to school. Oh, that show's great. Unbelievable. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue along. You see, Pat Riley got fined $25,000 for saying that he would like LeBron James on his basketball team.
He barely even said that. He said, hey, the key is under the mat.
Don't you think these executives, look, I understand Pat Riley's got millions. $25,000 is not a lot. But don't you think these executives should be like, all right, Adam, let's talk. What exactly is tampering? Right. I'm on an interview in a radio show and I can't just say I want a player to play on my team.
I mean, is that such a horrible thing to do?
Like if somebody says, hey, do you want whoever, just pick like Mike Conley. And you go, yeah, I wouldn't mind Mike Conley. Like, I got to pay you $50,000 for that? What are you talking about?
Daryl Morey got slapped with $75 for a tweet.
Yeah.
Just say, Steph Curry mentioned something about his brother. What did Daryl Morey, he tweeted like, doors open or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. And it's like, look.
Is that really tampering?
It's not tampering because all of these guys, like Pat Riley should say, tell me how that's tampering when he knows, I know, and everybody knows I would like him on my team. Everybody wants him on his team. Everybody wants LeBron on their team. Like, it's not tampering. Tampering is if I was actively seeking, like, I would think tampering is calling LeBron's agent and going, hey, what's the contract? Is there an out clause? Hey, why don't you send the contract over to me? Let me look it over with fine-tooth comb. Let me see if there's a way he can get out of that. And then we'll pay the damages of that contract so we can get him on this team. Tampering.
Do you now have to be like Gene Hackman in The Replacements? You remember when he goes, what is your football team name? Heart. That was his way of saying, Keanu Reeves, we need you back.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right.
Heart.
Like, is that what it is now?
Like, he's got to go and like, he's got LeBron, I'm going to say something. It's going to be your code word, okay?
I think he was on like a podcast doing this. It was a radio show.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. He's on this show and he goes, yeah, the door is open. I'll leave a key under the mat.
Yeah.
And the NBA is like, oh, that's too much. Here's 25,000.
Well, why is his 25 and Daryl Morey 75?
Right. That's true. Good point.
Pat
Riley's made a lot more money than Daryl Morey has over the years.
Is it because Daryl Morey's gotten more trouble with social media than Pat Riley?
Pat Riley's been cashing eight figure checks every year since I was a kid.
I mean, you want to know something. Adam Silver could reach out to some reporters and say, hey, I'll cut you a deal. Why don't you just start asking GMs, would you want Steph Curry on your team?
Hey, that's a good point. You know what? That's a good point. That's like, we need revenue. This is how we're going to raise revenue.
We lost out a lot last year.
I'll give you 0.5% of every fine I get if you just ask every general manager in the league if they want LeBron James on their team.
Steph Curry,
start asking everybody from the Indiana Pacers to the Memphis Grizzlies to the Orlando Magic. You just hit every general manager. Would you like LeBron on your team? Yeah, of course I'd like LeBron. Cha-ching.
Yep.
Cha-ching.
Adam Silver looking over the budget. Disney's still sticking us with a steep bill, man.
That's right.
That bubble didn't cost nearly what they said it was going to cost.
Yeah, exactly. Those bags of peanuts were like $7 a pop.
In baseball and football, NFL, MLB, they don't have tampering, right?
I never hear this in any other sport. Unless I'm missing it.
I mean, because
I'll admit I might be missing it.
You can go to a head coach right now. I swear they've talked about, we would love to have Aaron Rodgers if we can make it work.
Does Roger Goodell do this if you say, yeah, I wouldn't mind Deshaun Watson on my team, even though he's under contract? Like, does he crack? I'm sure
tampering.
He does. It feels like the NBA just lives for this. Like, they can't wait until these general managers and coaches open their mouths.
Yeah, like you said, it is one thing. If you're calling if you're saying out of the media, it's like, what's his contract stipulations? I mean, there's probably an out clause. If we investigate this out clause, we can probably find a way to get him on this team.
Let's all work together and find the out clause.
Okay, that I can see that's tampering. But just saying, especially with a player that has history there.
Yeah.
Like LeBron James has history in Miami. He won championships for them. Why wouldn't Pat Riley say the key's under the mat, the door is open?
If I was Pat Riley, the next time somebody asks me that question, I would go, no, we have no interest in that at all. And then I would absolutely make it so comical that LeBron would be like, man, that's funny. Yeah. Like, I'd be like, no,
all right,
we
I'm
have more
back.
Than enough championships. We got enough with him. We got two. We're totally happy with that as an organization. Having the best player on your team is problematic. You got to play until June. You got to be in, you got to sell more tickets. You got to get more concessions sold. You got to have, more media come to your games because you're playing more important games. Like, I would make it so outrageous of an answer to drive home the point to Adam Silver that this is silly.
No, I know.
Right?
I mean, almost to the point where you're saying, no, why would I want the best player on the planet?
Yeah, well,
we don't need him.
We as an organization, we like just 82 games. That's all we need. That's it. Like, when April comes, we're glad it's over. We all go on vacation. To make us play more basketball? Why would we want that? And with LeBron, we'd have to play more basketball. We have no interest in that whatsoever as an organization.
Or do you go the other route, too, and go, oh, you know what? Yeah, and please, 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 I love 72-game seasons in 3 months.
Yeah, right. I totally agree.
We need to do that more often.
Let's bang that out more. let's cram it all in together like we did. Exactly. It's $25,000 for saying you want LeBron on your team. What a joke. The more you think about that, the more you process that. What a joke.
It's so dumb.
It's so dumb. So dumb.
I personally was surprised that they actually fined Pat Riley.
I know.
I thought they'd be afraid to.
Oh, everybody's afraid of Pat Riley.
Right.
Maybe
that's Adam Silver flexing his muscle and was like, I'm not afraid of anybody.
You want to talk
$25,000.
You want to talk about people who are powerful. Like, there are people you mess with, you can mess with, and there's people you can't mess with. Pat Riley, you cannot mess with Pat Riley. Like, Pat Riley, all seriousness, that man is powerful. Powerful. If you cross him in this league for whatever reason, good luck.
He is really
powerful.
And it doesn't help that he looks like a mob boss.
Of course, right? Slick hair.
Slick hair, you know.
But, you know, we talk about people in sports who have been a presence, like, as long as we've been alive. That's Pat Riley. Pat Riley has been a presence in my lifetime, my whole life. My whole life, Pat Riley has been a very, very important person, right? Like, a lot of people that we consider important people today haven't always been that, right, in my lifetime, right? But Pat Riley, from the second I started watching NBA basketball, Pat Riley's been an incredibly important
person. He's been there.
He's been a part of it the entire time.
You're absolutely
extremely
right.
Extremely important, whether he was a coach of the Lakers, when he was the coach of the Knicks, when he was the coach of the Heat, when he took over the Heat. He has been a mega force in this league. $25,000. I would have sent him in pennies. That's how little I would have thought of the fine. I would have shipped, what, 250?
He probably is.
What, 2 million pennies?
He's gonna
ship them off.
Yeah, he's gonna be that bitter man,
right?
And he's like, yeah, here's your $25,000.
Yep, here's your $25,000, all in pennies. Good luck.
He's got a guy working on it right now.
I would have sent it in Bitcoin just to see if they could figure it out. It's funny, Pat Riley. I love Pat Riley. You know what? What's really great, and this is going down a little bit more memory lane back in the '80s. When the image you had of Pat Riley, you were just talking about it, with the slick hair and the suits and everything, wasn't he the perfect coach for the image of the 80s between the Celtics and the Lakers?
Yes.
He was like the perfect, like if you were to make a movie about these two cities, these two teams, these two fan bases, what they represented, what, you know, what the contrasts were, and you were casting in a movie, you would find a Pat Riley character. You would create the coach with the Armani suits and the slick back hair that looked Showtime as much as his basketball team played Showtime, right? You would find a guy that looked like Jack Nicholson was my best friend. Diane Cannon is my best friend. I hang around in the Hollywood Hills. I meet with movie producers. I drink champagne out of a shoe, like all of that for the Lakers. That was Pat Riley. Like he looked. He would not have worked in any other city. Billy Cunningham looked like Philadelphia. When you watch old clips of Billy Cunningham running the Sixers, he looked Philadelphia. He looked blue collar. He looked like Casey Jones, same thing. Bill Fritch, or early coach of the Celtics, same thing. Working class, that city, dump of a building, but it was our dump, that kind of thing. And Pat Riley was the perfect Lakers, Showtime, 80s, Hollywood coach. He looked exactly like you would want a coach of the Lakers in the 1980s to look like.
Yeah, he looked Showtime.
He totally looked Showtime.
He looked like the man to lead Showtime.
Right. Imagine if you had, I don't know, some like Rudy Tomjanovich, right? Like Rudy Tomjanovich is a good coach, but he coached the Lakers. But imagine if he was coaching Showtime Lakers. It wouldn't work, right?
No.
It didn't feel the same. And again, he was the coach of the Lakers and he won championships with the Rockets and a brilliant basketball mind. But he was not the image of the 1980s Showtime Lakers, right?
No,
Riley was.
And that's what kind of made the Lakers who the Lakers are.
Yeah.
You know, because you had, you know, the glam and glitz of the Showtime Lakers going up against the blue-collar Celtics. And that's what, you know, the NBA, that's what we thrived over for the NBA.
You know, mean, seriously.
In that one year when, I can't remember who, was it the Rockets? The Rockets who got the best, who was it that got the best of the Lakers?
Oh, the Rockets.
The Rockets. Yeah,
they did it twice.
Yeah, and that's not who you wanted the Celtics to go up against.
Right. The Celtics won two championships. They won three titles in the 80s. Two of them were against Houston.
Yeah.
Like, that just, like, there was only one they won against the Lakers in that 80s period. The Lakers got Boston twice. Twice. They got the Sixers in 82. They got them in 80. The Lakers got Boston twice, but the Boston only got them once. And their other two titles came against Houston.
That's the matchup you wanted because you had the blue collar team in Boston going up against the glam, the glitz. You know,
we would see it all the time. That's what we would see as kids kind of growing up in New England. We would see, like, the Boston, you know, Boston Garden. It was like it's a train station. It's an old building. If you've ever been there, it smelled, but it was classic. It was home court advantage on an extraterrestrial level. But the Great Western Forum to us looked like Taj Mahal.
Well, I mean, you put it perfectly. You're saying it was the old Boston Garden, right? It was a dump.
Yep.
The Great Western Forum had a nightclub.
Exclusive nightclub
downstairs was invite only.
The idea, and here's the other thing, and those of you, like, the idea that there was a huge parking lot outside the Great Western, like, you had to find parking. You went to Boston, you had to find parking. You had to find a lot that you paid money to and then walk to the garden. Like, the idea that there was this building, this glorious basketball arena with parking, and it looked fantastic. That's what we watched
every
year.
That's not everywhere, Tony.
Right.
Not every arena has a parking
lot. You drive
like
downtown Boston, they would go, $10, $10, parking lot. Well, I don't know what it was back then. I'll have to ask my father how much it cost for parking back when we were kids. But,
well, yeah, $10 is cheap now.
$10 is cheap now, right? It might have been 10 bucks back then. Who knows? But that's what you had to do. Right? Same with Fenway Park. Fenway Park was Fenway Park, you'd park in places to get boxed in. You'd have to wait till everybody leaves before you got your car. Right? And we would see the Great Western Forum, and it was just this magnificent building filled with mega celebrities playing basketball. It's so great, though. I will say this. As a guy that's getting much, much older, kid in college now, it is so great that in 2021 that I could do a story about Pat Riley still doing his thing. Still doing his thing. It's great. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Well, we can't do a Throwback Thursday on the final episode of The Sopranos anniversary without this song, the one that ended it all. This hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. And this is an iconic classic rock tune, but now every time I hear it, I think of The Sopranos.
Yes.
Like, it became, it morphed
became their
into
song.
That. Right.
And it's used in a lot of different movies and TV shows. It's like everyone's go-to 80s song.
That's right. Exactly. Oh, when I hear this, especially as this song ramps up,
yep.
I still think of Meadow parking that car. She can't get it. She's backing up. And the tension of what's going on in the diner.
And then running across the street.
Across the street to catch her family, who are eating the onion rings best in the state. Right? That's what you do.
Honestly, that scene is incredible by itself.
Yeah.
Because just the tension that is building, just the way it's shot. It's edited so
well. It's so well edited. You may not like the ending, and I know that's the case, but it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and then it cuts to black.
Yeah, and there's no words.
Yeah.
Which is the other thing. You know, a lot of times you want someone to say something to kind of set the mood, but you just see it in their faces.
Yeah. And I watch, when I rewatch that scene, I watch the guy in the members only jacket just to see anything that gives it away that he's there for that reason. You know, he is looking over there. He is looking, you know, he does glance over it.
And he could, honestly, he could be there just picking up his to-go order.
Oh, he could have been an FBI agent. He could have been an FBI agent following him. Right? Like, you don't know.
I always like to think, yeah, he's just the guy down the street, you know.
Yeah.
They place a to-go order, he's picking it up. He's getting onion rings to go.
A lot of fun on this Throwback Thursday going back in television history. Jake Asman Show coming up next. It is Wake Up Call. We'll be back tomorrow getting you more into the NBA playoffs as we got some games tonight. We'll have a more wrap-up of that coming up. Thanks for joining us. Again, Jake Asman's next on Sports Map Radio.